This ROFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air. Greetings, everybody. You're listening to a program called Avant Gardening, coming from the Wairarapa, New Zealand. Our presenters are Margaret, Anna Marie, and Marnie today. And in this series of programs, we examine how the world is changing and the effects on gardening and producing food. We will be looking at different systems and approaches to gardening, their principles, ideas, as well as examples and these approaches. Sometimes we'll be talking about the problems they do come with. So today we're going to talk about water retention in the garden. And we're going to start with
Hugelkultur.
I can never pronounce that.
No, I'm probably not pronouncing it properly either.
Never mind, as long as anyone knows it starts with an H.
Right.
Right.
Could be horticulture. Could be anything, really, couldn't it?
Okay.
Yeah, so, it's Hugelkultur. It comes from Sweden, she says, looking at Marnie to confirm that.
Really? I thought it was Swiss.
Oh, could be too. Oops, take it back. Okay, right.
Anyway, it's European, anyway.
It's European, yes, yes. And essentially, what it is Hugelkultur stands for hill culture, as in hill gardening. So because the place where this comes from, often it's a frozen tundra. So it can be very, very cold, and gardening in that sort of permafrost is very, very difficult. So the solution to that is get a heap of wood and then pile it up and put soil over the top of that and garden in that. And that is essentially what Hugelkultur is just wood with soil on top of it. And then you can put a mulch on, like straw or something, rather, or hay to keep it sort of a bit warmer. I'm always rushing off into the middle when I should be starting at the beginning. The reasons for doing Hugelkultur are that the wood, as it rots, actually produces a little bit of heat. The faster things rot or decompose, the more heat they produce. So if you have a wood that is decomposing very quickly, like pine, then you get a lot more heat out of it than you would out of something like, obviously totara is never going to rot, is it? So don't use that. But the woods do rot at different rates. And it's the little microorganisms that are busy sort of consuming the wood that, as they die, they produce heat because it's a kind of a whole decomposition system. The advantages are that the rotting wood also soaks up an enormous amount of water. As you all know, if you've ever picked up a bit of old pine and it's rotted away and it's been sitting in the rain or fallen in the creek or something, when you pull it out, it is much, much heavier than it would be if it was just floating about being a bit of wood. So technically, you can use them as a water retention method where they will suck up a lot of water in winter, and then in summer they will just slowly give that out to the plants. Now, that can work. It can also not work quite so well. If they do dry out, they can be quite hard to get wet again. So putting a mulch on the outside is actually really important. And pretty much once you've made your Hugelkultur, you can put your plants in straight away because it's got soil on the outside. You can use soil or compost or whatever. But it actually has a growing medium on it already. So you can just,
so it's in like a heap?
It's in a heap. Often they're in a big long row. And they can be quite tall. They can be up to kind of like a metre high.
Okay.
I tend to use a reverse Hugelkultur where I will actually dig the because I don't live obviously in the permafrost, I'll dig a big trench or a big hole in the ground and pile rotting wood into that. And you have it quite close packed. You don't leave big air gaps because that causes problems with sort of basically just drying out. So you stack the rotting wood in the bottom of that, or old pine branches, bits of scrub and things, and then you put your soil or your compost or bark back over the top of that, and then you can plant to that. And that has worked really well for us. A, it gets a lot of carbon into the soil very quickly. It retains quite a lot of water over summer, which is really good. It does sink a little bit over time, so you do have to be aware of that, as you can end up with the whole pile getting smaller and smaller and smaller. But worms will bring soil in and do things.
And it's still effective, even though it's collapsing a bit?
Yeah, even though it's collapsing a bit, that's okay.
Okay.
I'll often plant plants in shallow, you know, little depressions and things to gather water in if I'm a bit concerned that they're up on a rise or something. So,
How big are pieces of wood are you putting in?
If it's rotting, it can be any size.
Okay, you know? I mean, if one has a tree that you've cut down.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Does it have to be old wood or can it be quite fresh?
It's better if it's older. The fresh wood can take quite a long time to rot, depending on what it is. Pine will generally start rotting within, you know, if you fell a pine tree and it lands on the ground, you really do have to get that off the ground within 1 to 2 years. It starts to rot very, very quickly. Other trees are not quite like that. They can last for a long time. A gum wouldn't be very useful in a hugel culture unless they were very small sticks, because it lasts for a long, long time.
Yes, I know. Difficult to get rid of, actually.
Yeah, quite hard to get rid of. Yes. But to me, pine is actually a very useful thing. Fruit trees are really good. That's actually really popular because they do tend to rot quite quickly.
Okay. So it's any wood that's, well, no, I wouldn't say soft, but going to deteriorate quite quickly.
Yes, okay. Yes. And you can tell, you know, if there's branches on the ground and they're busy rotting and they've got little fungi growing out of them and things, then obviously that's going to be quite good in a hugel culture.
Now, when they did them on the side of hills, did they have to look at the way the sun comes, or because you say they're like a heap, so I would imagine one side gets better than the other.
Yeah, oh yes, when you're making them into a hill.
Yes.
That is a very good question. I don't know about the orientation of them.
Orientation is important because you've got if you orientate them so they are facing, the long side is facing the most of the sun, you end up with a sunny side and a shady side.
Mm. Yes.
Depending on where you are on the planet, that can be greater or lesser, because as you're closer towards the equator, that's less of a problem. As you're further north, it becomes more of a problem, particularly when you're moving into the winter months, when the sun is much lower in the sky. You end up with a definite sunny and a shady side.
Yes.
So if you orient them so one side gets the morning sun and one side gets the afternoon sun, then you can plant appropriately.
Okay, so that's not directly north or south. It's sort of east or west.
Depends where you are.
I mean, you can use them for wind protection as well. So you can, if you like, our predominant wind is from the northwest. So if we put a hugel culture in and we wanted to grow lettuces or something very delicate on the other side, then we would actually have, even though the sun is coming up on that sort of northerly aspect, you could actually plant on the other side of that. And that would, depending on where you are, you know, obviously if you're in the permafrost, then your sun's going to be very low. If I was up in the permafrost, I would actually have it facing south. I'd only be planting on one side. Anyway,
because the sun's quite low.
The name Sepp Holzer keeps swinging into my head. Was he the guy who wrote?
He was Swiss, wasn't he?
I think he wrote a book on hugel culture. Mostly because he was gardening quite high up and at altitude, there's a lot less topsoil.
Yep.
So his approach, his reason for using the hugel culture was so that he could get some depth of good growing soil without having to
dig a hole,
cover a quarter of an acre of with compost.
It meant
that he got a concentrated area which was very fertile, and also got the increased depth of topsoil, which meant he could grow things like root vegetables without them hitting solid rock 3 inches down.
My sister in Tasmania lives basically on a rock on a 25-degree slope, and so she uses hugel culture a lot because she just doesn't have topsoil kind of thing. So she brings in a lot of stuff and makes big piles of things. So, yeah, it is very effective for being able to grow in sort of quite some inclement places, really.
Mm. Is it quite popular in New Zealand?
It's a good question. Actually, we generally tend to have quite reasonable soils. So the reason for doing the hugel culture is because you are either living on solid clay or a rock or permafrost.
But with our changing climate, we're going to be thinking about how to retain water. Although, if I remember, you told me that with changing climate, the heat draws up more water and then we get these heavy rainfall, so it's not an even...
Well, that's quite useful with the hugel culture too, because those big rainfall events are what helps the hugel culture mound suck up water.
Okay.
And then your plants are actually not getting drowned, are they, because they're up a bit higher.
Ah.
So that's quite a useful thing. Mm. Yes.
Now, if you read the Poisonwood Diary, there's a whole section on someone trying to grow in a forested area, and they were digging down. They were Americans in the Congo, and the Congolese woman was saying, no, you must make them higher, because when the rains come, have a bit of a chance to not be flooded.
Yes.
So yes, okay, so they're off the ground, but they still retain enough water.
And I mean, you could use them in a swale kind of concept, couldn't you? You could put them on contour, like the permaculture thing you say. So you have like a hugel culture. So part of your swale You know, those
can you
sort of,
explain it to me what a swale is? These lovely words.
I'll just chip in here, actually, when you talk about swales. If you want to get yourself onto YouTube and get yourself onto a channel called The Weedy Gardener. Now, The Weedy Gardener is a chap in Australia, and he's a photographer. He's travelled the world working for some extraordinary people and publications. But when lockdown came, he got stuck in Australia, so he made himself this garden, and he started to document this garden. And he decided that he needed to do the swales thing to retain water. He got Jeff Lawton to come in. Jeff Lawton's a big advocate for swales. And he got Jeff Lawton to come in, and they marked out these swales. Swales are effectively ditches, and they follow the contour of the land, the idea being that when it rains, instead of the water rushing down the slope of the land, it gets caught by these recurring ditches down the slope and it gets retained.
Mm.
The ditches are filled with water-retaining materials. I think the Weedy Gardener used sawdust, but you could use the hugelkultur type materials to retain that water, which retains the moisture in the soil. And in between these ditches would be an ideal place to plant. And that's what this guy did.
Well, often they plant on top of the swale as well.
Yeah.
Because the roots will go down and get their
Is a swale a raised piece of ground?
No, it's dug in.
It's dug in, but what happens to that
soil? That makes the mound on the other side.
That's what I was going to say. It makes a ridge on the one side, but it's actually got the ditch there.
Yeah. Yes.
There are a few issues with swales, and you have to be very careful where you put them and what you plant on them. Some fruit trees do not like that amount of water that you get. So in winter, you can accidentally rot out your fruit trees.
That would look great.
So, there are certain places where they're very, very applicable. Desert situations are fantastic for swales. New Zealand, in a temperate climate, I'm not quite so sure. I think you've got to be very careful how you actually manage that and what you actually put on top of it. But, if you've got the space, give it a go, see what happens.
Well, Marnie, we spoke after the program last week about the one in Martinborough. Was that a swale where it affected the water of the neighbour?
Ah, yes. Some friends who live further south, and their neighbour did some major earthworks. Basically, he dug an enormous pond.
It was almost like
a lake. But he banked the material that was excavated to make this pond, lake, large body of water on his land. That dirt was mounded up on the boundary between him and his neighbours. So when it rains, all the water runs down the side of that now landscaped heap of dirt and collects on the other side of the boundary.
In the
neighbour's place.
Yeah.
Which means that the neighbour's place is now the first probably 20 feet, 25 feet of the neighbour's property is now unusable because it's a swamp for most of the time.
Oops.
Oh. Which side? Oh, no, sorry.
On the neighbour's side.
Okay.
So he dug a big pond on his own property. He heaped up the spoil on the boundary.
And the water ran back.
To make a big hill.
Yes.
And when it rains, the water hits the hill, runs straight down the hill, across the boundary, and into the neighbour's place.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's just a lesson of look carefully and don't do what you would destroy a neighbour's property by some form of landscaping.
Putting in a wetland, sometimes you put it too close to the... If you don't look at where that effect is going to happen, what it's going to do to the soil water table, you can accidentally affect your neighbour if your property is too small or too close, and it will actually back up and then hop into your neighbours and make it very boggy as well. So you've always got to be very careful when you're doing any water works, any sort of earthworks.
Anything
like that. Yes. You've got to be very, very careful.
But that's not a swell. That was just bad design.
That was just being an appalling neighbour, quite frankly. and they have tried to resolve this both with the neighbour and with the council, and I believe have actually even gone up as far as the Greater Wellington Regional Council in an attempt to resolve this, and they are getting absolutely nowhere.
And they won't. Once it's done, it's
gone. Yeah, well, it's done, and unfortunately the neighbour, I believe, is quite an influential person, so, of course, getting any action against something like that.
Those are good neighbours, but anyway, we won't go down those.
Yeah, so it's well worth it's well worth considering when you do this kind of thing, whether it's putting in a swale or even just planting trees. If you're planting trees on your property and it's those trees are going to grow, and you may well be cutting off the view for your neighbours or cutting off light for your neighbours or whatever. So it's not just about planning for your property. It's about planning to be a good neighbour and to make sure that what you're doing isn't going to impact the people around you.
Absolutely, absolutely.
If you're really, really lucky, what you're doing will act in concert with what the people around you are doing.
Yes.
And then you get a much more beneficial effect.
Right.
Yes.
So swales probably aren't as common in New Zealand.
Well, we don't need them. We have enough rain.
Yeah.
Well, the funny part is we drove last weekend and the hills in New Zealand are very interesting. It looks like someone drew them. They're little hills, round hills like that.
Depends on where you are.
Well, we're going to sort of pass a Dannyburg area.
Right.
Yep. And they're these little round hills. And I kept thinking, did someone do that? And I thought, no, that's, you know, and all the sheep have two legs that are shorter than another. But no, so yes, looking at your section and getting back to herbiculture, you might need them more in some areas than others, do you think?
Yes. It's not something I use it in very dry spots on my property because I've got river terraces.
Oh, yes.
Water lift stream terraces and things, which are, so there's one garden that I had that was extremely hard to keep in, raised gardens, because it just dried out so much, because raised gardens will dry out more. So I just, and it was an extremely, really hot garden, and it was just basically river run. It was just stone all the way down. So got the digger in, hubby's digger, and dug out a big hole, went down for about a metre and a half, and then filled it up with rotting logs, and then did some bark on top and soil and bits and pieces, and then planted citrus in it, and it works really well.
Okay, so it's retained it. Probably the rocks around it also helped hold the water a bit
better.
No,
they don't drain.
Lots of drainage. Lots of drainage.
Actually, I did forget to say that there's a big sheet of plastic in underneath it as well.
Okay, so that, you built the whole thing.
Yes.
So you mentioned raised beds.
Yes.
Now,
you can also use them in raised beds as well.
Mm.
My raised beds are quite high. They're 60 centimetres high because I'm a very lazy gardener, so I like to sit down with a cup of tea.
Other side. Glass of wine, but never mind.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
It is going out to the world. I like sitting on the side of them. So I then have a very large amount of soil to go into that bed to be able to get something that's going
to get it thick, it'll be
so
big enough.
If you put a lot of rotting logs at the bottom, then that way that you only have half the amount of soil.
And it's going to rot down anyway.
Yeah,
so eventually,
the soil.
I did that with baleage in my.
Oh,
when
brilliant!
I built a potager garden next to my house.
Yep.
And these beds are 6 meters long.
Mm.
And 1.2 metres wide. And I didn't want to have to pay to fill those up with soil.
Yeah.
So I had a couple of big bales of old baleage. So I just unwrapped those and probably the first 6 inches in the bottom were this old baleage.
Yeah. Yeah.
It did mean that over... By the time I got to the second year...
Yep.
They'd sunk down quite considerably
because
the baleage had rotted away. But, you know, it fed the bed and it filled it up for the first year, which meant I could come along in the second year and fill it up again rather than having to do it all up front.
Yes, yeah.
So it actually worked pretty well. And I do the reverse over the winter. I've just actually done it on the potager bed where I put old baleage on top. I think we talked about this in a previous programme. I empty the bed... And then put a layer of old baleage on the top of the soil and leave it there all winter.
Oh, it's great.
And that helps to protect the soil and then just plant into it in the spring.
Yeah. No, it is really.
So, in a way, you've also been mentioning when we talk like this, it's having a bit of protection on the top,
yeah,
a compost
you do.
Or
well,
it keeps or a mulch. Mulch,
yeah.
Yes.
It's like,
but that retains the water as well.
It does, yes, absolutely.
And it protects the soil.
Absolutely. And protects the soil.
Yes. Okay. One of the biggest drivers of water loss is. Wind is a drier like anything. So if you've got a mulch like a little blanket over your so if you think of it like when you hop out of the bath and you're all wet and naked and if a breeze comes through it doesn't end well but if you've got a towel around you and you can still be wet but you don't get or dressing gown or something you don't get because you've got that protection
that's exactly the same thing, it's the wind. So in a garden we talk about herbiculture and we talk a bit about mulch, but bringing the water to there. Now, I know you have a wonderful husband who's laid taps everywhere.
Yes, but I don't water things like that. I water my raised gardens with my vegetables in,
yes,
but okay. I don't water my fruit trees at all.
Right, stuff underneath it.
I manage it really, really well, and I use a lot of old hay bales for mulch and things, and that really helps. And also, we do tend to get a lot of rain where we are. So,
right.
One other thing I'd like to say about hugelkultur is in New Zealand, we have an awful lot of pine trees, and we have a terrible problem with slash.
Yes, we do,
The waste branches that they just basically leave in big piles all over the place. And when a heap of rain comes, you end up with all of this floating down rivers and taking up bridges and people's houses, and it ends very badly. A lot of that slash could be used for systems like hugelkultur, because you can make, you know, it is an easy, it's a cheap, mostly free resource that could be
used. I don't get why slash is just left there as a problem. To me,
yes,
who has tried to buy arborist mulch,
because it's expensive to access. That's the problem, it's cartage.
But if you got up there with a big truck and a big mulcher and just mulched the hell out of it, filled your truck up,
mm-hmm.
and then brought it down into town, I'm sure you'd have heaps of gardeners who'd go, yeah, I'll have that, thank you very much.
It'll be the $1 million machine for the mulch. I mean, I know. I've been sitting in my little distillery, looking out the window at the slash sitting on the side of this hill, thinking exactly that. You know, there is an industry there. The problem is that mulching machine, because those logs can be quite large that they're trying to put in there, and it would be a big machine, and it's very expensive. You then need three machines, because you need a big grappling thingy that picks it up. So you're talking $3 million before you get out of bed, just for the infrastructure to do that. And then you need to pay the wages, and then you're trying to flog it off to some food forester out there for $70 a load, and they're, oh, I don't want to pay for this, you know, it's all. So
that's the irony of farming and forestry, is the wastage that goes and then causes another problem elsewhere. I mean,
you would have to legislate. You would have to legislate from the government, the top end, to say that you may not leave slash around.
Yeah, I think they're starting to do that after all the drama.
But surely, though, as things continue to change, as the weather continues to change, things like putting mulch on your garden is a no-brainer. It soaks up the rain when you get too much rain.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps the soil moist when you haven't got enough rain. It uses something which would otherwise be rubbish and actually actively an issue when it goes hurtling down the hillside in a big rain event. I'm not seeing a downside here. I'm really not, other than that capital outlay actually do the thing. But at what point do you say this has to be a money-making venture? There has to be something, surely, which says to those companies that are harvesting the wood, you will tidy up after yourself.
Mm.
And if you don't, we are going to hit you with a monster fine. Yeah. Oh, look, your $3 million has been paid for.
Yeah. I think it'll end up having to be legislated. Because it's that sort of thing that doesn't, normally come to a company unless he's thinking very environmentally.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of things like that just develop because there's money in it.
Yeah. The margins in forestry are very, very small.
Yeah.
Nobody's making a lot of money, and there's a lot of companies are going bust. So what I would prefer to do is that these lands were opened up. I mean, the whole heap of health and safety issues, God forbid, we should drive off the edge, where you can go in and you can pick up the rotting log or the slash and take it home and make a garden out of it.
Mm.
I think that would be a good intermediary thing. But we're talking thousands and thousands and thousands of acres. It is huge.
I mean, what's happened in the last year or two has been disastrous, especially in the East Coast.
Yes.
Where it's come down and ripped everything out.
Yeah.
We're actually talking a bit about flooding then, really. What's been happening with the rain that's changing? Well, I don't know if it is changing. Well, no, I mustn't get into the climate change debate, but certainly heavy rains. So you can save water by the way you garden, but you need to think through how you're going to get it. You were able, Anna, to get rotting pine from piles near the
just on our property.
Oh, your property.
We have several big pine trees,
right,
which blow over in the wind. The branches fall off in the wind. We have two big stands quite close to our house that we're busy taking down. There's a lot of rotting pine.
Yes. But you haven't learned to sell it at your gate, have you?
No.
Give it away. Remember we talked about giving away stuff, you know, Anna?
Yes, and I get a lot of Marnie's stuff that she's giving away, but not a lot of stuff leaves my property. I'm sort of quite...
Well, I know you're a collector of things, so and you've got a big property.
Yes.
But Marnie, you've got wind, so you've had to think all this stuff through as well. The damage that... Well, not damage that wind does. Dries out, breaks down. You know,
this is another example of how what you do affects your neighbours, because my neighbour is, I've got a railway line that runs across the end of my property, and the railway company decided to take down all the trees on either side of the track. And I mean, other than the obvious amenity value of the trees, they look great. As soon as they did that, any wind that comes whistling across from the hills there comes whistling up my property now and rattles around the back of my house because these trees are gone.
Yes.
But there was no consultation about this. They just took them. So now I'm having to do some retrospective planting on my property to sort that out. Yes. If they'd told me ahead of time that they were going to do this,
I could have
planted these last year.
Yeah.
But they didn't. They just turned up one day and started pulling trees down. And that was the first we'd heard of it.
Yeah.
So what you do impacts your neighbours.
It does. It does. So let's start wrapping up. So we've talked a lot about Culture. I think we can go on talking about water retention in lots of different ways. There are different methods, how to use water sparingly. There's a lot of things. So perhaps in our next program, we can continue a bit with that.
Hmm.
So anything further you want to say on do it or not?
Yes, I would. I would do it. I think if you have the wood available, if you can get access to the wood, then I think it's a very useful thing.
Good. And Marnie?
Absolutely.
Good. Well, thank you both again for a nice discussion. I go home, well, I am home, learning a lot. By the way, we record this in my lounge, but never mind. Thank you.